So on the topic of sugar and insulin, we're talking about hormones. But let's go back to inflammation. Is sugar inflammatory?
Sugar is probably the most inflammatory thing that we consume on a regular basis.
And what's inflammation do in your body? What does it make you feel like?
Well, we need some level of inflammation just for protection against basic damage. That's what it's there for, is to go in and clean up any damage or infection. And then once you start to overshoot on that process, then you start to have things like pain and irritation and discomfort, fatigue. You start to have all of these symptoms from excess inflammation, even when it's no longer serving any purpose in your body.
So inflammation makes you feel sore, grumpy, and old.
Yes, that's a good summary. It does make you feel all of those things, no matter how old you are.
That's right.
Yeah.
So can you go into a little bit more about what sugar does in our body as far as our hormones and how it affects our hormones?
Yes. So when we're talking about sugar and first the male or female hormones, the biggest thing that we're starting to see more and more often is women, their bodies are responding to the excess sugar intake and to the insulin spikes by actually modifying the way we produce our female hormones. So not only is it causing us to have shifts in our fertility and significant reduction in our fertility and our ability to ovulate, but other things that we see in our bodies that we don't really like. So it'll cause acne, hair loss, abdominal weight gain, body hair, things that are a product of our bodies starting to produce male hormones where we should be producing female hormones.
So eating donuts can make you do that.
Yes. And so why does that happen to some people, but not all people?
Right.
That probably has to do with your family history and may have something to do with some chemical exposures that you had as a child, which are both things that you don't have any control over now. What you do have control over is whether or not you continue to feed that process, because it is reversible. It is controllable. But in conventional medicine, that process is treated with metformin and birth control. So the underlying problem can continue to spiral out of control and start to cause other health effects.
So the underlying program being that you're not eating right, you're not moving right.
That your insulin levels are excessive for your body. And so even if you correct the hormonal effects of starting to have those changes, you still have a substantially higher cardiovascular risk, because you have to fix the underlying problem that's causing those hormone changes.
So you're just kind of like putting a Band-Aid on it that will slip off with time.
Yeah. And that's probably the main hormone change that we see, is women starting to produce those male hormones instead of female hormones. But gaining fat and gaining weight from insulin spikes can cause other hormone changes. So people who are overweight can have very high estrogen levels, male and female. And that can also contribute to a lot of problems, various health problems, just from having excessive estrogen. And on the topic of diet and weight loss, excessive estrogen will make you eat too much. So you gain weight, you produce excessive estrogen. So estrogen's not bad. Excessive estrogen is bad. And then when you have that excessive estrogen, you're more hungry and then you gain more weight. So that's not fun.
Not at all. It's no wonder so many of us are feeling overweight and really fatigued and kind of powerless that way.
Yeah. And because in medicine, the focus on the training is really kind of rescuing people from acute disease processes. Those experiences of having excess hunger because your estrogen level is too high, or starting to see small changes in your body hair because you're eating too much sugar, that's not on your doctor's radar. That's not part of their day-to-day routine. So if you think that they would have told you by now if that was happening, don't assume that that's the case.
So for traditional medicine, they're there to worry about putting a fire out, not helping you have a better foundation.
Well, the doctor that I collaborate with the most put it best when she said, "I deal with the sickness, you deal with the wellness." So it's true. There are times when she can intervene in an illness that has progressed enough that person kind of needs to be rescued. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to how do we keep from getting to that point of needing to be rescued, how do we intervene before that happens? That's not a part of your medical visit when you go to the doctor.
I got it. I want to go back to talking about macronutrients.
Yeah.
In an earlier podcast, we talked a lot about carbs, and we talked about between 100 to 120 carbs per day and what that looks like. But what are some of the other micronutrients that we need to look at in our diets?
Other macronutrients? Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely need to be thinking about protein and fat in terms of balance. And so we definitely need to be consuming enough protein to build active tissue in our bodies. So when we exercise and we build muscle, we need to have enough protein in our diet to build that muscle. So that's something that's really important. And I see a lot of people that still are not consuming enough protein.
And why is that? Are they afraid to, or are they just, it's just not on their radar, or they don't know, or?
So many people have bought into so many quick fix diets that they're so confused about what they need that they're completely out of touch with what their body's craving and what makes them feel well. And there are dietary plans that say, oh, you should never consume any meat, or you shouldn't consume too much protein. You can get everything you need from plants and vegetables. And they kind of take that to an extreme, I think. Or they think they paid attention to everything that was being said in the 80s about rice and pasta and fruit and beans and all that stuff. And they thought that protein wasn't important and kind of went with that.
So protein is important because, in fact, it's the foundation of our muscular system.
Right. And if you are not consuming enough protein, we are able to maintain that system. We can survive. So that is true. But if we want that system to thrive, then we need to feed it. And if you are not feeding it, your body will compensate in other ways. But that's not necessarily a good thing. We do require some protein.
So just from a trainer's point of view, I know that it's important to have muscle because that's the foundation of our metabolism.
Yeah.
So protein is critical to that. Can you tell me what an average woman would consume as far as grams of protein a day? Or is that really dependent on?
Yeah. So I want to go back to something that you said, though, because that's the foundation of metabolism. I think to expand on that, what you're saying is that the muscles are active tissue, meaning at rest, they're consuming calories.
Right.
So that means that when you say the protein is the foundation of our metabolism, what you're saying, what I know you're saying is the muscles need to be fed because they are the part of your body that's burning calories at rest.
That's right.
Then how much do we probably need to feed that active tissue? Some of that depends on activity level. But if you're not getting 70 grams in a day, I think it's not enough. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And 70 grams of quality protein, not like in a protein bar or protein shake.
Right. And I do see tons of people who really bought into that carbs are bad, fat is bad, and then there's meat, and meat's bad too. So it's like they're living on protein powders and vegetables. Mm-hmm. And that I've watched that pan out long enough to know that that's not it. That's not the solution to eating right, is the powders and vegetables. It's no fun. And the consequence of that, right, is that you go crazy and eat a whole bunch of cake, and then you go back on protein powders and vegetables.
Right.
That's one choice. Or you're actually regimented enough to live like that 100% of the time without having those binges. And then you start to get hormone shutdown, fatigue, inflammation, illness just from eating like that.
So what about the people that say, well, I don't want to eat meat because all the saturated fat's terrible for my heart and my cardiovascular system?
So if you don't want to eat meat because of a moral or ethical reason, I will have that conversation with you. But if you're doing it for your health, I don't agree with that. And so the saturated fat, I think that we've effectively gotten to the point where we don't believe that saturated fat is what's causing heart disease. So we have to take a step back and say, okay, why did we think that then? Why did we think that saturated fat was such a problem? I think when they first started looking at cadavers, right, they started looking at bodies and looking in the blood vessels of people who died of heart attacks, and they saw fat. They saw hard fat, and they said, hard fat is bad. Don't eat it. Mm-hmm. And so then they started making all of these bottled fats and processed fats and said, bottled fat is good because it doesn't harden.
Right.
But that turned out to be not true. And we continued to believe that even to the point of being ridiculous, right? Everybody's still doing it, even though it doesn't make any sense. It's not working. Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea that saturated fat is bad for us is something that is a myth, but we haven't gotten over it yet. And what I will say is, if you don't believe that, you can read the science, but if you don't believe that, think about if you've ever seen breast milk in a bottle, pumped breast milk. Does it have canola oil floating on the top? Is there a layer of olive oil on there because that's what's healthy for our baby?
No,
it has pure a thick layer of saturated fat that separates out, because that's what our babies absolutely require for life. We have to give them that fat. And so we give them saturated fat because they are using that as fuel. They're building their brains with it. They're building all of their cell membranes with it. They need it. And there's no thin layer of olive oil in there. There's just the saturated fat and the lactose and the water and the protein. If our breast milk is giving our little babies cardiovascular disease, I would be shocked. But I think that the reality is that saturated fat is okay, but we have to buy good meat.
Right.
And so if you're buying meat that is corn-fed, feedlot, bottom of the barrel in terms of quality and top of the line in terms of profit, if you're buying that, then it's probably not very good for you. But if you are buying animals that have been fed their natural diet, so a cow that's eaten grass, a chicken that's walked around and eaten bugs, those animals are part of our diet. And again, if you have a moral reason, I will have that conversation with you. But if you really believe that the saturated fat is your problem, I think you're incorrect. And I think if you will spend a little bit more on buying the good meat and eat a little bit less of it to make up for the cost, you will see those numbers change on your blood work.
So besides I agree with you, but besides that, why is eating meat so important to our health?
Well, there are, and there are vegetarians that would disagree with me on this, and that's okay. There are nutrients that are difficult to get from other sources. So not impossible. And if you're committed to it, then that's a different story. But it is difficult to get the nutrients that you need from a completely plant-based diet. Now, can you get those nutrients from a minimal amount of animal protein? Absolutely. That can be done. But we need the B12, we need the iron, and we need a lot of other things that are probably beyond what our understanding is of what's in our food. We can't just take a multivitamin and expect to compensate for these other natural parts of our diet. So getting protein from a bean is not the same as getting the protein from meat. It's a complete protein. We're able to use it very, very efficiently. And if we consume reasonable amounts and good sources, I think it's fine.
Can we talk a little bit now about fat?
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about saturated fat, but I mean, I was the queen of aerobics, queen of training back in the 80s. I ate hardly any fat, a ton of pasta and bagels. I was 20 pounds heavier than I am now, constantly hungry, fighting with myself about it, and I wouldn't eat fat for anything.
Yeah.
And now I eat fat all the time.
Yeah.
And my skin's better.
Yeah, you look great.
My hair is better. But I think that's another myth that's kind of sticking with us from society that we don't want to eat fat.
Yeah. So I could spend a whole day talking about what I think about eating fat. But the short version is really, really simple. I believe that if you look at the food and you can tell what the food is, where it came from, that fat is probably okay. So if I'm looking at a bottle of oil, I don't know. I'm not sure. How long has it been sitting there? How did they process it? Did it get heated up? Is there anything else in there? I have no idea if that's good for me. But if there's an olive, it's probably okay. It's probably fine. You know, same thing with if I go to McDonald's and I try to get a breakfast that reasonably high in fat. Do I know that those fats are okay for my body and that my body knows what to do with them? I don't know. But if I crack an egg that came from a chicken that ate a chicken's diet, can I be pretty sure that my body knows what to do with that? Yeah, I think so. I think that's true. And by following that very, very basic logic, if like, did this fat come from nature? Is my body designed to know what to do with that? If people do that, what's the outcome on increasing the fat and then checking the cholesterol? And what I see is the outcome's very good. the outcome's very, very positive because we're allowing people to make all these man-made fats for us and we eat it like we think it's good for us and it's not. We're making our brain out of those fats. We're making every cell membrane in our body, the cell membranes, that's how we communicate. The cells communicate with the rest of our body. We're making the most important communication systems in our body out of fat that's man-made. And I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't like that idea.
I wonder if how many people don't even realize that.
I think that when I think about feeding a child, the one thing that I think about as kind of a big picture is what am I building your brain out of? Because that's like my favorite part of you, right? Is how you act and how you interact with me and other people. So what are we using to make that really key part of you? Is it, you know, Cheez-Its? Is it microwave popcorn? Is it Jif? Or is it an egg? And I will pick the egg any day of the week. I will take that risk that they are getting too much saturated fat because I believe that their bodies are designed to know what to do with that kind of fat. And every study that I've ever read supports that idea.
So we shouldn't be fat phobic.
Right.
Right. As long as the choice of our fats is something that comes from nature and is found in nature.
Right. And so that I think that brings us to an important point about increasing your fat intake, because I kind of make the joke that, you know, yes, I want you to increase your fat intake, but also I want you to decrease your carbohydrate intake. And if you go home and you hear me say, I think fat is okay for you, and then you start eating cake with butter on top, that's not okay. So we can't increase the sugar and the fat, or we just have a high calorie diet. And so, yes, you will see every, you know, metabolic syndrome, every type of disease get worse from excessive fat and sugar together. But if you reduce the sugar and replace it with fat, you have a more sustainable energy source, more satisfying, you know, sustained energy level, and you don't have the sugar cravings every 90 minutes. It's a much better food source, but you have to do the part where you take out the sugar.
Yes, and you also have to not eat, you know, a whole bag of nuts.
Yeah, and so the calories are still calories.
Right.
And so the biggest thing that, and this is true for me, I don't know that it's true for everybody. I would have a hard time sitting down and eating enough raw walnuts to overdose. I mean, they're just not that good.
Yeah.
They're fine. I could eat a little bit, but I wouldn't eat a ton. When you start getting into roasting and salting, then they taste really, really good. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to keep eating beyond what's satisfying. Mm-hmm. If you eat a raw nut, it's not as easy to go crazy with that calorie-wise.
And that's what you would recommend, raw nuts anyway.
If you tend to overeat on the nuts, if you're able to portion control, so portion is 2 tablespoons. If you're able to portion control with a roasted salted nut, you're my hero. And, you know, good for you. Keep eating that stuff. The best part of the nut is the natural fat. If we don't modify it by roasting it or adding other oils, then it's better for us.
Well, I love raw nuts, but I have to do a handful a day.
Yeah.
It's one handful a day for me or else I can go off the
Yeah. So I think when you identify those things that are an easy place to overeat and set a limit for yourself, then that works.
All right. I have a really big thing to talk to you about. You know what it is?
Yes.
Alcohol.
So that's a tough one because it's actually very common for people as they get control of their diet to start picking up other addictive things, to increase whatever other addictive things they like. And so it's actually really challenging to reduce alcohol or limit alcohol when you're cutting out sugar or restricting carbohydrates. So it is a really important topic and we have to think about what our body does with that. And we have to think about the alcohol as being processed like a carbohydrate.
So it's a processed food.
It's a processed food.
Yuck.
And if you have a glass of wine at the end of your day, that's not going to ruin your diet. It's just probably not going to be the thing that derails you. But if you tend to keep going, and or if you tend to overdo it and then overconsume other things, then it is a problem. So I think that we can accept moderation with alcohol, but I do think that the majority of the people that I see that are trying to lose weight don't really have an easy time with that alcohol moderation.
So So in the first 3 weeks, we do no alcohol, and that's because we're trying to really get clean.
Yeah.
And just to see, give our bodies a chance to heal.
Yeah.
And see, what does it feel like without any inflammatories, right?
Yeah.
But I know from my experience with myself and also with my clients, it's hard when you start to do drinking again. Because yeah. It's easy to overdo.
It's really easy to overdo it. And, you know, especially if you go out and somebody else kind of overpours, or you go to a friend's house and they always fill up your glass for you, it is really easy to overconsume and not think about it. And it can be the thing that keeps you from being successful, because we're usually drinking at night, right? I mean, most people,
hopefully.
I think. But that's when the more you have an insulin spike, the more it's actually going to matter. So our bodies are much more sensitive to those insulin spikes causing weight gain when our melatonin is high. So at night. What that doesn't mean is, you know, don't sleep or stop taking your melatonin. What that means is that when we have sugar spikes or alcohol spikes right before bed, we're going to store that much more than we would have if we had had those carbohydrates during the day.
So like drink it and wear it. So like enjoy that wine on your bottom.
Yes. Yes. And you know, if it's a part of your social interaction, that's okay. But it's definitely something that we need to think of as a portion of carbohydrates, as a dessert. If you more often than not overdo it on the alcohol, you won't meet your weight loss goals.
It's just going to be a sabotage.
Yeah.
So to work it into our continued après 21-day, you would suggest counting it as a dessert?
I would suggest counting it as a dessert.
And within that 120 grams of carbohydrates per day.
Yeah, and so I would actually just count it as a portion of carbohydrates, because some of your alcohol is not necessarily going to count for a lot of calories, but I still think that as a rule of thumb, you should think of it as one of your carbohydrates. Because through similar mechanisms, it's going to cause weight gain. So even if you read the label and you say, oh, no, I'm fine, this doesn't have that many carbohydrates, I still want you to think of it as one of your carbohydrates for the day.
You just have to think of it as a dessert.
Yes.
As a treat.
Yeah. So during your 21 days, definitely it's a good thing to eliminate. And it can be challenging, but you can do it.
And if you can't do it... That's another podcast.
Yeah, that's a separate program.